Welcome to our 3 p.m. service. Can you tell the person beside you, it's good to see you in our 3 p.m. service. We just started this series 7 weeks ago. We called it as 10. And if you remember, we've been talking about the 10 commandments. That's simply why we're calling it as 10. And we're going to look at the perfect law, which is reflective of the perfect love of God for us. Now, I know that when we talk about rules and regulations, usually it's not something that you're so excited for, right? I mean, how many of you are so excited when they're saying, okay, let's talk about house rules. This is what you shouldn't do. You don't go like, oh yeah, house rules. Come on, bring it on. You know, you don't want that. You rather be much more relaxed. But how many of you realize that without laws, rules, and regulations, things go quite messy? Would you agree with me on that? And in fact, if you get to realize, if you're a parent, you would definitely agree with me that you would really want to institute some laws in your home. Without those laws, things can get so chaotic, all right? And in fact, if you get to realize this, your parents, if you're a student, if you're a child, you'll get to someday realize that even the things that your parents have been asking you to do, the principles they've been teaching you, is out of their love for you. They do this because they want to make sure that you don't mess up your life. Do you agree with me on that? And in fact, as we get to look at the perfect law of God, we can all the more get to see and realize how much this is reflective of the kind of a love that God has towards us, all right? And what we are doing today, we're on the 8th installment, so we're going to be talking about the 8th commandment. And guess what? This is about stealing, all right? And like I said, laws might sound difficult to want to keep, but it's interesting how the Apostle John put it in this way. In 1 John 5:3, it says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome." Wow. I think this is something to want to understand. I think this is something that we have to pray that, Lord, help me get this. I'm so thankful. A couple of years ago, this was a revelation for me that, you know what? Laws don't have to be restrictive necessarily. If I get to understand God's heart for me, I can all the more want to desire to keep His commandments. And He's saying that we keep those commandments out of His love for us, and we get to realize that these laws, therefore, are not burdensome. Is that good? So when I'm talking later, I hope and pray that it's not a point for you to be condemned, because God already loves you. And in fact, out of His love for you, He has given these commandments for us to keep. Is that good?
Yeah.
All right. Let's look at this. So Exodus 20, verse 15. We're talking about stealing. It says here, simply put, you shall not steal. All right. So we're talking about stealing. And, you know, it just so happened yesterday, I went to have a haircut and, you know, I drove, it was in National Road. Don't ask me where. I went there, I parked my motorbike outside and got to have my hair cut, stayed for about 30-something minutes in line waiting for my turn. About 30, 45 minutes later, I came out just to realize my keys were on my motorbike turned on. I was like, oh man, God, thank you. Thank you that Dumaguete City is filled with gentle people, that they don't steal anything. You know, in fact, it's either that Dumaguete is filled with gentle people or other way around, my bike is not worth stealing, which is so probable. But I'm hoping that the first one is the true one. Either way, I think some of us might have had some experiences with stealing. And in fact, to let you understand this one as to how relevant this actually is, stealing is not something so uncommon to us, okay? How many of you are staying in a house? You have a home. The rest of you are staying in streets and carton. We all have homes, right? Let me ask you, how many of you do have locks? Multiple locks. The first one, the second one, and the third one. Then you put fences and all the things, and if people can cross the fences, there's a dog to catch them. I have these pictures here. It says, is there life after death? Jump this fence and find out. All right, we put all these things to protect us. If they can surpass the dog, sometimes the dog is okay. Beware of the owner. He's got a shotgun right ready for you. You know what I mean? We do everything we can to make sure things are secure. We put an intimidating security guard just to scare, intimidate the people who are about to come in. Check back and forth everything that you have with their metal detectors just to make sure you don't have anything explosive with you. I relate with that. I don't know if you've tried that, but this is particularly true to me. I had this experience. I was flying to Macau after quite a number of years of staying in Philippines. I think 6 years was that I was here then. I decided to have an international trip. I went to Macau. I thought that's a great country that is so open to, you know, many nationalities. And of course it is. It's just that, you know, I'm Iranian. So the moment I got to the place, it was the last flight at night. And I definitely was the last one the last passenger who was leaving the airport. By the time I arrived, they got to let me wait for a while. They asked me every single thing they could ask me about. What am I going to do? Where am I going? How long will I stay? Why am I a student? Why do I want to study nursing? And everything they would want to ask me in my entire life. I'm really thankful that my friend was with me because they asked for money. And guess what? That's not something I had too much with me. So my friend Ceci helped me out of the situation. But, you know, I realized it is difficult to travel if you're an Iranian. Okay. Don't try this. But I just wonder, for example, what will happen if you're in an airplane? Then let's say you're walking down the aisle, then all of a sudden you notice your friend Jack, and you go like, "Hi, Jack." No, no. Oh no, wait a second. You know, okay, some of you didn't get that. You'll understand it later. When you ride your pedicab going home, ha ha ha. But either way, I encourage you not to try that. Maybe you wanna like replace it with, for example, "Greetings, Jack," or "Good morning, Jack," or I don't know, "Salutations, Jack." Just don't say "Hi, Jack," okay? That's a criminal offense. Especially if you're wearing a backpack or something, don't do that. They'll all get scared. They'll throw you to jail. But what I mean to say is that we institute so much measures just to keep us secure. Look at your phones. Most of you probably have passwords. If you don't, you probably would want to have, unless people will know who's your crush. All right, or your laptops, they probably have passwords, or gadgets, or Facebook, my goodness, if you don't put a password, or if your password is too easy to figure out, or you forget to log out, have you tried that? Yeah. Somebody hacks you. And it's something that can probably affect us so much, and because we consider it so important, we take a lot of measures just to want to keep us secured and safe. All right, and this is what I want to tell you. See, this is so important to us. That's the same reason why God considered it important too, and He's given us this law for that very reason, to preserve and to protect what we have and what we own. Is that good? Let's get to see this one. Like I read a while ago in Exodus 20:15, it says here, "You shall not steal," all right? This very verse in its core is also showing that God recognizes private property ownership rights, meaning God is recognizing that He can own something. Now, Psalms 24 verse 1 does say that the earth is the Lord's and fullness thereof, and the world and everything that is in it. Everything that is dwelling in it, everyone, everything is God's. But God does give us the right to own things. All right? And the same way that it's a right to own something, God is also instituting this law to say that we, together with that right, we have a responsibility. All right? You know, very often we are so interested to want to know what's our rights. We would pound on that, "This is my right. I have the right to own this." If they ask you the question, would you want somebody to steal something from you? Definitely you'd say no. But how about the other way around? In the same way that we have the right, so does our neighbor. And Bible is instituting this law to want to say, the same way that we have the right to own something privately, we have to respect that same right for others. And we have a responsibility to respect that right. All right. And together with this, I was trying to just basically get this around. You know, when I talk about stealing, I think it's good to get to define that. Oxford American Dictionary talks about it in this way. So stealing is taking another person's property without permission or legal right or without intending to return it. If you take it without their permission, not planning to return that one, that's stealing. However, if you look at it as well in Hebrew, the word steal there is the word ganab, which means to carry away or be brought by stealth, deceiving, or kidnapping. If I were to really make this short and simple and understandable, is this one. Stealing is when you take from anyone anything that doesn't belong to you. Okay? Can you tell your seatmate anything? You know, it is really interesting to note that this commandment, unlike the previous ones, is not really specific. For instance, when we talked about murder, it's about shedding the blood of an innocent person. Or when we talk about adultery, it's more applicable to talking about a married couple. But when we talk about stealing, it says, "You shall not steal." That's it. No specifications. And together with not having specification, that means to say, you cannot steal anything that belongs to anyone that is not yours, because it belongs to them. All right? And together with that, I also got to realize that it's actually quite a general thing too. In fact, if you try to analyze this with me, this commandment on stealing encompasses the previous ones too. Look at this. What were the other commandments he talked about? Murder is the stealing of a person's life. Adultery is the stealing of the person's spouse. Lying, the next one, is going to be the stealing of justice. Coveting is the desire to steal something from someone. You see, it encompasses quite much. And I know some of you are thinking, well, I don't do shoplifting or stuff like that. But we're going to get to talk about this, and you will see how much of a thing this actually does encompass. And like I said, this is quite a general thing, and it has no specifications as to what it really does include. And it does not have, together with that, any excuses or reasons or exceptions. But it's not like those laws that they put, footnote one, except unless otherwise, of course, considering this circumstance, there are no excuses. There are no reasons that can qualify stealing. Some of you might be asking, how about Robin Hood? What if I steal from the rich to give to the poor? Here's what I want to tell you. Stop reading Robin Hood. You might want to look at your Bible too. You know what? There is no reason that can justify stealing. You've got to realize that your ends cannot justify the means. Just because the end is good, it doesn't mean you can get to there in whatever way you want. No, stealing is not good no matter what. There is no excuse, there is no reason can justify that one. In Proverbs 6, 30 to 31, it says this way, just to make my point clear. It says here, people do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he's hungry. Hungry, that looks like a legitimate need, meaning he really needs it himself. However, verse 31 continues to say, but if he is caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. What am I trying to say? Even if he's hungry, even if there seems to be a need, stealing still is not justifiable. Is that clear? There is no excuse, there is no reason that can justify stealing. And if I were to really put this in terms, therefore, when I said anything, I want to say it in this way. This commandment is involving any kind of stealing, all right? That is stealing people, the most common or the most general sense of it, and anything that the people own. All right, stealing people or anything that they own. Can you tell your seatmate? People and people's possessions. All right, that's good. Look at this. Stealing people, what am I talking about? I'm talking about kidnapping. I'm talking about stealing people and selling them for slavery. All right, this verse is explicitly talking about Bible standing against that one. We have the right to respect people's lives. All right, we cannot steal people. Can you look at the person beside you? Do they look like a kidnapper? Or you might consider. But look at this. I'm sure probably we are not into that. Are you, if you're here? Security guard, please. I'm sure we might not have that situation probably as bad as it seems. But as we go more specific, you get to realize that we might be included. I said people, stealing people or people's possessions. When I say possession, that includes quite a lot of things that people can possess. All right. And together with this, we've got to realize that we have to respect people's properties. That means no break-ins, no hijacking, no shoplifting, no stealing of things from a shop, from a place. Okay. That's what we mean by people's possessions. Things that rightfully belongs to other people. Now, like I said, I'm sure that until here, many of you would say, okay, I'm fine with that. Haven't done that, haven't killed someone, haven't really hijacked a plane before, thought of one but didn't do it. Or whatever it be, you might try to exclude yourself, but here's how I want to make us understand. I was preparing for this, and I was quite shocked that it encompasses pretty much of a lot of things that, guess what, believe it or not, we're all guilty. So is that okay? Can I say these things?
Yeah.
All right, that's good. But again, my point is not to condemn you, but let me explain this for a while. When I said people's possessions, Proverbs 22:28 says, do not move the ancient landmarks that your fathers have set. Meaning if there are things that is owned by certain people, you ought not to touch that. You should have your limits. Your possession is different from others. And coveting theirs is not right. Wanting to steal it from them in whatever way is not right. Look at this. When we want to steal things that includes, people's possessions include material things and their money. Let me give you some examples here. I've got a good number of those. Bringing home stuff from the office. Anyone? Any office supplies? You bring bond papers and you have a lot of company pens for your kids' schooling. And, you know, there's all the hole punchers that have the company's titles. Things that are owned by the company, but it's at home for your kids. But we have things. Paper clips. We get it all the time. I know it's cheap, but guess what? It's the company's, not your kids. Yeah. You agree with me? Look at this. Improper compensation. Or underpaying your employees. For some of us, not paying our helpers. Or if they do rightfully deserve to be paid for a certain duty or for a certain labor they've done, but they don't pay them. We're actually stealing what rightfully belongs to them, right? Look at this, false billing. I had friends, and I know a lot of people who would collect receipts. I also collect receipts. But I use at the back, I write my to-do list. But what they collect the receipts for is because they want to attach it as they file their expenses for a particular trip that they had. And the boss wonders, how come you had 6 meals a day? Regular people even have maximum 3 to 5. You had 6? I know we want to falsely bill our employers, or vice versa. We underpay our employees. It's a rampant thing we do this. Tax evasion. We underpay our taxes. We do not declare what they ought to give. Guess what? Taxes belong to the government. That's the lifeline of the government. You know, I don't mind if the government is corrupt or not. It's still your duty to give to them what rightfully belongs to them. You can pray for them. You can do your best to elect and select the right leaders. But it's not your job to withhold what rightfully belongs to them. Am I right? Yeah. Okay. That sounded good, no? It hits. It hits hard. It's not me. It's the word of God, all right? I'm just explaining it. So don't hate me for that. False insurance claims. My house burned. I actually do know of certain cases like this. They would burn their shops and their houses just to want to claim their rights from the insurance company. False insurance claims. What rightfully does not belong to you. And this one, guess what? Bribery and corruption. You know, it's really interesting. I was first year in Silliman and I was having a lot of classmates in my poll sci subject, especially. We'll talk about what are the political issues of the country, what has been happening in the past, in the history of the country. And when I would ask them this question, what is the biggest problem we can think of the government? Number one, everybody would say, corruption. And you would ask the students to write articles, 5-7 pages, with so much citations of how to deal with that and everything and everything and everything. And they have so much to say about it. Everybody wants corruption to be done with. But guess what? When they get into a problem, the first thing that they say is that, I have a friend there. Oh, my uncle's working in the government. Oh, I have this connection there. They constantly talk about their connections. Guess what? Until the time that they use our connections and we bribe people, there's going to be corruption. Oops. Oops. And when I say corruption, I'm not only talking about graft in the government. If you're in a line and you prioritize your friend who's also in the line, you're actually being corrupt. All those customers equally deserve the same service from you as a person who's serving them. There should be no mistreatment between your friend and any other customer. Do I make sense? Because you're stealing people's turn and their right of time. Is your friend's time any more valuable than anybody else's? Definitely not, right? Moving on, unreasonably high interest rates, 5-6. I know that gives a big money at hand, but that's a money coming from robbery. That's unreasonable. You shoot the price up. You're actually stealing what rightfully belongs to people. How's it going, guys? You're so silent. Okay, again, don't take this against me. Look at this, unpaid debts. Not paying your debts on purpose. You have the money, but because you think he also has the money, just rather not pay the debt. Am I talking to someone here?
Yes.
I have a personal experience with this one. Not returning something that you've borrowed just because you like that. Have you tried this before? You give something to someone, they don't return it. You know, I tried giving my jackets. I had this jacket, Silliman jackets, and they were nice, so I decided to give it to them. It was like several different instances. I gave it to them, and it didn't come back to me ever again. You know what was the problem? They're from the church. So please return it back to me after this service. I'd be thankful. I'm just joking. They're not around here. I'm just joking about that. But you see, just because you like that, that doesn't mean you can keep it.
Yeah.
Guess what? I liked it too. That's why I bought it. Am I right? Am I right? Consider this one. What do you do when you find something? What if you find money? You know, finding something and not wanting with your heart, wanting to return it back to the owner, that's still stealing what rightfully belongs to them. Okay, for instance, what do you do if you find money in the street? What do you guys do? You don't just get it. That's too obvious. You first have to step on it and then wait there for a while. And after looking around, nobody's watching, you look at your shoe, you start tying it. Then while nobody's looking, you get the money, put it right there at the back. I'm not teaching. Professional. Look at this. Now, I know some of you might say, well, of course, what am I gonna do? Am I gonna look for who had the money with this serial number? Well, I know they don't know the serial number of their money. But do we truly want to give it back to whom it belongs to? Or do we try to find our way to get it? Listen, if it rightfully belongs to others, that simply means it's not yours. And this one, look at this. I think many are guilty of this one. Many of us are guilty of this one. Misusing company hours. Your work hours are from 8, for example, to 5, or 8 to 12. You go around 8:15. That's already 30 minutes late. That's 30 minutes that belong legibly to the company for work, and you didn't do it that way. And let's not talk about Facebook, right? That's absolutely a different world while working, right? That's working on two things at the same time. While you do Facebook, while you're doing... Okay, I won't ask you to raise your hands for that. But when we do things that doesn't really involve our job, we're spending time on things that is not supposed to be there for, right? That time rightfully belongs, and that effort, that labor rightfully belongs to the company while we're not giving it that way. You file a sick leave just to wanna do Pokemon Go? I mean, come on. I understand that's fun, but sick leave for that? Look at this. Students in the house, cutting classes. Am I talking to someone? Cutting classes. That rightfully belonged to you and your family's money that was paid for that. And there you are cutting classes. Listen, I'm going to give you an advice, just a piece of advice, and I hope and pray you'll catch this. If you would want to ask me for one single advice in my entire student life in the past, how many, 8, 9 years or more, since even before college, I'll just give you this one advice. If you do this, I really believe it's going to revolutionize your grades. It's a wisdom point. You want to get that?
Yes.
You know what you should do? Don't misuse your time in your classes. If you're in the class, your primary role is to listen and learn there. If you would just listen in the class, I tell you what, you can learn it right there. You don't have to spend your time after class. Cut your social life, cut all the things that you're supposed to do for the ministry, etc., etc., etc. I can't make this happen because I have studies. I'm not sure if you have studies, but I think you probably have difficulty managing your time. If you would just spend the time that you're in classroom to want to learn right there and then, I believe you would spend so much less time wanting to study that one at home. All right, anyway, this is not a pep talk. It's not a pep class. I handle pep class. I talk longer for that. But this is just a tip. You can digest it later on your own. Another one, deceiving sales talks. You know what I mean by this? When you deceive people with sales talk, you try to tell them, you try to sell something, you're trying to sell your cell phone. You go like, you know what, this cell phone is brand new. I haven't even used it once. I mean twice. It's of course on. So I haven't used it even twice. It's working perfectly fine. And by the time you sell it, 1 week after, it's destroyed. Deceiving sales talks. We try to do sales talks as if it's the best thing in the entire world. Well, it's actually not. You're stealing what rightfully belongs to them. Their right for knowledge and their right for the money that they have, for the proper compensation for what they're paying for. All right, deceiving sales talks. Have you ever tried buying something online and it does not meet your expectation? Yes. I came across this one. It says here, bought a rug online for my mom and realized the importance of specifying the size of the product you're selling. What is this rug? It's like a, what, hanky? Expectation versus reality. Deceiving sales talks. We try to present it as perfect, but it's actually not. Am I talking to someone? Anybody has been victim of these things? Anybody has tried this one? You would probably relate to this one. Look at this. Have you tried buying chips or any of those snacks and just get to realize it looked so big by the time you opened that more than half of it was air? How do you feel with that? I feel cheated. I have a sample here. Look at this. Like, you get this one. You expect this to be, what, snacks for 1 week, right? Guess how much is it inside? Where do I cut this from? Look at this. Like, oh, it's air. Oh, isn't it disappointing? Oh my goodness. Practically half of it is air. You guys want some?
Yes.
How do you feel about this? Less than half is what you actually are paying for. The rest of it is air. Guess what? Air is free. I could just breathe that. Can I just have the chips? Thank you for this. Yes, it doesn't really pay off so much. As bad as it is to want to be cheated, it is also bad to cheat. Like I said, there is a right, together with it, there is a responsibility. Proverbs 11:1 says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Are we using the right balances as we sell things, as we do our negotiations? And look at this one. Some of you might think, what about this one? Did you know if you don't give your tithe, you're robbing God? That's actually stealing from what rightfully belongs to God. Malachi 3:10 puts it this way. It says, "Will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you in your tithes and your contributions?" Listen, the tenth belongs to the Lord already. If you're not giving your tithe, you're actually robbing what rightfully belongs to God. And it's like, there's a law that God has instituted that we ought not to steal. Now, like I said a while ago, I said, stealing involves what? Stealing involves people and people's possessions. And these possessions aren't only material possessions. Now, a while ago, I just talked about the material things, i.e. shoplifting, etc., or any other things that might be included, things that are material, the money. But guess what? People's possessions aren't only money and material things. It involves also non-material, non-tangible stuff too. In fact, guess what? Sometimes these non-material things are even worse. Stealing those things are even more harmful. What am I talking about? Look at this. Stealing people's reputation. It's people's possession, their reputation. You know, stealing someone's good name can sometimes do an irreparable damage to that person. It's sometimes very difficult, sometimes never possible, to want to regain that good reputation. What am I talking about? Libel, slandering, gossip. If you talk behind the person's back, and you're trying to make him look bad in front of his friends, the people who know him, you're destroying, you're stealing that person's reputation and that person's good name. Something that probably that person had worked for the longest time. Am I talking to someone here? It involves non-material and non-tangible things, such as reputation. Gossip can do great damage to a person. And as well, not just that, but stealing dignity. Listen, what am I talking about? Public humiliation. Listen. Bullying. Bullying, what it does. Yes, you of course you may sound funny because what you said might have been true or you've exaggerated in a funny manner, but have you realized what kind of a damage it did to the person whom you were bullying? Or the person got publicly humiliated? You know, sometimes by doing that, we get to take something from a person that is so precious to that person, and that's his or her dignity. Bullying can do irreparable damage sometimes to some people. Yes, again, you might be funny, but at the expense of that person's security. Yeah. Is it worth it? And as well, not just that, but stealing trust. You see, it's a possession of people that they trust, right? What am I talking about? Even in the context of defrauding people. Some of you might have this deep hugot coming out here, but what do I mean by this? You try to give all the love words and love-sounding relationships just to want to get the person involved into a relationship. Just to what? Want to get sex out of that? Or want to get the emotions involved? That's still stealing the person's trust. Defrauding is when you're stealing that person's trust. That's right that person had to want to enjoy love for a long time. Am I talking to someone?
Yes!
Come on. And one last thing. Are you guys ready for this? Something that you don't sometimes notice, but it's very harmful too. Stealing intellectual properties. What am I talking about? I'm talking about copyrights. I'm talking about trademarks. Piracy of all softwares. Illegal downloads of music, name it. Movies. Torrent pa more. Look at this. Cheating. How many of you have tried, you take an exam, you study so hard for that, and then here is your friend who just simply copies all the information from you, and he gets a higher score. Don't you want to just hang him outside? I mean, it feels terrible. What did they do? They stole your intellectual property. The grade that rightfully belonged to you, they got it. Of course, illegally. And of course, plagiarism. You just try to write stuff out without citing it, without saying who the original thought came from. And you would just want to sound smart with that? That's not right. I tell you what, the person put a lot of effort, a lot of sweat and tears to want to study, understand, and explain that one. He came up with the idea, and here you're just simply plagiarizing that. Plagiarism is stealing that person's intellectual property. And lastly, identity theft. You can't just simply present yourself as anybody else and to want to get what rightfully belongs to them because of their reputation and who they are. In fact, I came across this picture in Facebook. I was like, my goodness, I can't believe it. He stole my face. I'm like, how is this possible? I feel downgraded. I mean, Adam Levine doing this. Of course, there's only slight difference, but still, I mean, I appreciate my face more. Okay. Enough of my face. What am I trying to say? If you look at this, by saying all this, I just want us to realize that this commandment encompasses so much in our lives. It practically, almost every area of our life is touched with this commandment. It involves almost everything that we are doing every single day. And I really agree with that person that said, if the world would just keep this one commandment, I'm sure the world would have been a much more beautiful place to want to live in. Do you agree with me? How many of you agree with me that you're all guilty of this? Anyone who's not guilty here? I'm sure we all are, without exception. We all are. What am I trying to say? I'm not just here to say that we are wrong. Yes, we are. But what else? Here's what I'm trying to say. God has the grace to transform your life and to change you so much to even be a totally different person. I'm not just here to say don't do these things. But what I'm trying to say is this one. Look at this. Paul put this in these terms. In Ephesians 4:28 says, let the thief, who's now become a Christian, let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor doing honest work with his own hands. Look at this. Very often, the reason why we steal, the reason why we want to get things from other people is because we're lazy. We don't want to work hard for that ourselves. He's saying you'll be changed so much, let him now begin to work, do the honest work by his own hands. I want to gain those things. So that what? Not just so that he can have it. But look at, this is what shows that true transformation had happened. And true repentance took place. It says that so that he may have something to share. Can you just imagine? God can change you so much. Not only that you won't steal, but you'll be even giving away to those in need. That shows that that's the kind of a thing that God really desires for you. And I tell you what, this is not something you can do on your own. This is not something that you're going to try so hard not to steal anymore. But this is something that will only happen to you if you realize the kind of a love that God has for you. His grace will change. In fact, the Bible puts it in this way. It is His kindness that brings us to repentance. Look at this. I was thinking about it. It's really interesting. The very first sin that we know of in the Bible, in the first place, was actually a case of stealing. Look at Eve. What happened with Eve was that God forbid her and Adam to want to take from the fruit of the tree of knowledge and good and evil. See, God created the world good. And He wanted them just to experience what was good. But I just wonder what was wrong with us. But we just so really want to also know what we don't know. All right? By Eve deciding and desiring to take what did not rightfully belong to her, in a sense, she was actually stealing. And guess what? Out of that very disobedience, Satan got the chance to want to steal our hearts and in a sense us from God. You know, stealing, sometimes you might feel like when something is stolen, well, the person who stole it might benefit to some extent, might actually get something material for him or for her. But it's never really fun for the person who was stolen from. Do you agree with me? And I was thinking about this. God, how did you feel when we were stolen from you? Can you just imagine what was God's feeling when we were stolen from Him? And I could feel how God really feels that same way. That great deal of thing that was stolen from Him. I came across this story I want to share with you as I come to an end. There was this kid that he loved arts and crafts, and he was carving stuff on a wood, and he really loved to make things out of that, make some wooden toys, and he came to make the best thing that he could possibly make, and he started carving out a sailboat. It took him quite a while, it took him quite months of effort, and he started carving out, until he made this wooden sailboat, and he spent time to paint it, to prepare it, he put all the cloth, fashioned it as best as he could. And after that, it went on his first day. And he started playing around with it. And he put it in the open ocean. He started letting it go around, let the wind bring it afar. And then he attached a rope to it. He tried playing around with it. Until suddenly the rope got cut off and the wind was too strong that the sailboat was driven away by the wind. And what happened was that he could not find it anymore. Somebody found it on the other side of the island. And he brought it and he sold it to a shop, a second-hand item shop. And what happened was that days, months after, this small kid went around, and all of a sudden, while he was passing by the street, he got to realize that that shop selling secondhand stuff, had his boat there. And I was like, my goodness, I found my boat. He went inside, I said, you know what? This is my boat. I know this boat. I know that scratch there. I know the color. I was the one who made it with this size, with these colors. It's mine. I've been the one who made it. And the owner said, you know what? Maybe you were the one who made it, but I paid for this, so I've bought this. It's now mine. And saddened by that, that kid had to realize and leave the shop. So he thought of what he could do, and he started thinking that he can probably do a part-time job, get all his allowance for his savings, and get enough sum of money to want to buy it again. And after so much time of working and trying to save up, he got enough money, went back to the shop, and bought that sailboat back for him. And after he held it in his hands, he goes like, you know what? I made you, and now I bought you. And now I own you twice. Church, do you realize that we were God's masterpiece? God had spent so much time and the best of His effort to want to create us. He called us His masterpiece, His best workmanship. And we were stolen from Him. And He knows the pain of that. And He was willing to go to the extent of even dying on the cross just to want to buy us back to Him. See, God knows how it is, how it feels to be stolen from. And together with that, He was willing enough not only to make us, but even to buy us. In fact, in Luke chapter 19:10, it says here, talking about Jesus, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. You see, when the Bible talks about the devil, it says that the devil, the thief, is coming to steal, to kill, and to destroy. But guess what Jesus does on return? He came that we can have life and have it to the full. It was His intention that despite us having been stolen, we can be bought back to Him. That's the kind of a love that He was presenting to us. On the cross, when He was dying, He was showing that kind of a love for what He really treasured. That's me and you. And guess what? We are the thieves. I didn't talk about just a sailboat that didn't do anything. Just a while ago, I was talking about us being the thieves. He was willing to pay that price for us. Have you ever realized that the two people that were being crucified with Jesus were also thieves? Jesus decided and was willing to humble Himself to a point of dying with thieves, with sinners who deserve to die. That was supposed to be me and you, dying with Jesus. And yet He was willing to die for them. Isn't it comforting to realize how much He loved them? Even to a point that while they were dying with Him, He was promising to one of them that He's going to be with Him in paradise that same day. That's the kind of a love that God is showing to me and to you. We are the thieves. We deserve the death. But He chose to love us and He died for us that we can be saved, that we can experience life and life to the full with Him. Listen, that's the kind of a love that can change our lives. That we no longer will steal, but to the other extreme we will give.